Hail, hail. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast, brought to you by CelticUnderground.net. Episode 5 of the podcast, and we are halfway to 10 in a row of guests with Saints first names and Irish second names. That is a policy we will abandon once we've achieved 10 in a row. It did get me thinking, what guests could we get on after this point with good, you know, Protestant names? So I googled Protestant names, and it's basically just like, you know, Luther and Calvin. But then I noticed on the list was Wesley. And I've never met a Wesley before, but it got me thinking about the name Wesley. And the only Wesley I know is the Dutch international, Wesley Sneijder. A great footballer in his day. And but then he's not a Protestant. He converted to Catholicism when he played for Inter Milan, inspired by his good friend Javier Zanetti. Now, some of you are getting tired of me talking about stuff like this, but that's fine. I don't really care. You didn't know that before you listened to this, so you've learned something. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Lawrence Donegan.
How you doing there, mate?
Very good, very good. How's California, eh?
It is getting a bit scary. Jet setter. We drove down. We live in Northern California. We had to drive down to the southern end of the state for family reasons. We'll leave it at that. And so we're in San Diego. And where we live, it's been really good. The Bay Area locked down on March the 11th. One of the first areas in the whole of the country. Anyway, really, really good. So the rates and all the COVID thing, it was pretty good up here. So you go down there, I was sitting at a coffee shop with my mask on, trying to suck coffee through my mask. And I counted, just for the hell of it, 22 people around me, 3 of them had on masks. Nobody's giving a shit down there. And the numbers are, again, I looked at a heat map, this morning, and see that down that southern end. It's leaking through from Arizona into southern Nevada and now into southern California. It's kind of scary. But other than that, fantastic.
Right. You're on the show for the obvious reasons that you're a Celtic fan. But so far, this is episode 5, and we're 5 in a row for Catholic Saints names and an Irish surname. And you're an absolute belter. St. Lawrence and Donegan. What could be more Irish than that? And I didn't know a lot about this. Is because we're trying to mix up the show, it can't all be us talking about Paul McStay, which is what it has become. I decided I'm going to look up the Catholic Saints and learn a little thing about them. St. Lawrence is quite interesting. And I've scribbled down a list of things that St. Lawrence is the patron saint of. Do you know any of these?
No, I've just called it up, but it's not immediately to hand on the Google search.
All right, well.
Oh, hang on a minute. He's the patron saint of the poor and of cooks. Is that right?
And cooks, yep. But this list is mental. Armories, so where people keep weapons, I guess. Barbecues, spelt BBQS, apparently. So proper, like, modern barbecues.
No, that has to be some kind of Roman thing. It can't be... Because I'm guessing there weren't any barbecues around when St. Lawrence
was cooked meat. Meat was always getting cooked. Is barbecues a Latin word? I don't know. Brewers is on the list. Butchers, which would tie into the barbecues. Here's the weirdest one. Comedians.
Oh, is he?
Apparently so. Librarians, miners. And this one confused me at first. Tanners. Because at first I thought people lying on a beach. And then I realised, oh no, that's some leather production gig, isn't it?
Well, the only thing about all this stuff is that I was actually christened Lorenzo. I wasn't
christened. It's the same saint, isn't it?
I know that, but yeah. I guess. Because I was christened at St. Mary's Bannockburn, and it was a, what do they call it? I can't remember now. I've lost all the lingo. But it was an intern. It was a wee boy had come over from Spain. And I was the first ever service he'd ever done. And he was so nervous, apparently, that he christened me Lorenzo Francisco. So that's my proper lingo. So our son, his middle name is Francisco. We did that.
And you live in California, eh? So that all works.
It all works. So there you go. Thanks for that. It was worth coming on just to learn about that.
Right. Beyond that, let's get into our Celtic lifetime 11.
You don't want to talk about Donegan? You don't want to talk about Don? No, it's all right. I'm only joking. No.
Your name does always bring something to my head, which is the film The Sting. You seen the film The Sting?
Ah, but I can't remember it. Why was there?
One of the great films. Robert Shaw's villain in The Sting is called Doyle Lonergan. So your name always makes me think of evil Doyle Lonergan. You're going to get yourself another game.
Kenneth Lonergan is the one, you know, the playwright who directed that great film, You Can Count on Me. I always follow Peter. I've ever come across, Donegan's quite an unusual name. There was only four Donegans in the Glasgow phone directory. No. So if I ever come across a Donegan on Twitter, I always follow them.
Yeah. I tried to do that with Murrays. Turns out there's loads of really alt-right lunatics called Murray.
I tell you, the Donegans seem to be apart from myself, obviously, quite a cerebral kind of bit. You know, there's a poet and there's a Radio 4 producer and
there's too many Murrays. There's good ones and bad ones and something in between, like myself.
There you go.
Anyway, let's get on to your Celtic lifetime 11. What's your formation? Start with that.
Well, I'm going because I like it. I've always liked it. I really grew to love it when Neil Lennon was doing it. I'm going 4-4-2-3-1, but it's adaptable.
Okay.
So that's when we don't have the ball. When we do have the ball, we're going to a back three, and then we're going to go 3-4. Trying to think, 3-4-3, but I might go 3-4-2-1. That's the thing, or I might go 3-4-1-2.
Total football. I picked the best all over the shop.
Yeah, I picked the best players. I know that you've got to obviously pick players for positions.
Yeah.
But you kind of pick the best players, don't you? You got to pick the best players. Would you pick a team? I mean, you've got four guys for one position. How can you not pick a Celtic team without Jimmy Johnson in it? You just can't.
I don't know how old you are.
I am, hang on a minute, I'm 58 years old. My first Celtic game would be 69.
All right, so you're good. Right. All right. So your team's going to be better than I thought, right?
Oh, right. I mean, Charlie, well, I wonder, I don't think I can get away with Charlie Tully, but maybe I can't remember when Charlie Tully's last game was for Celtic. Anyway, so I've got all the bases covered. My career following Celtic dates back to then, but, you know, because I've travelled a lot and lived a lot of places, it's kind of sporadic, you know, in terms of teams that I saw and teams I know. So.
Okay, and who your favourites are as a result of that.
Yeah.
Right, excellent. So, who's in sticks? Let's start there.
Well, this is a kind of obvious one, isn't it? And I've listened to the previous shows, and obviously, Ronnie Simpson would be... But Ronnie, I don't think he was a great goalkeeper, to be honest, let's be fair.
He made it into the team in episode 4, which hasn't gone out yet.
When I first started going to Celtic, Simpson was just getting phased out.
Right.
And I knew I was going to do this, and I thought, how about Evan Williams? I always loved Evan Williams. Always really, he was a classic kind of Celtic, with that classic yellow shirt and all. And he was just the first goalie I ever remember. So the only research I did for this, I had 10 minutes and I sort of looked up, I typed in Evan Williams into the YouTube machine. Sorry, he wasn't very good, Evan Williams. The one you go at, if you type in Evan Williams Celtic into YouTube, the first game that comes up is Ajax away, 1971, I think it is. We got beat, absolutely, Cruyff scored the first goal for them. Great, they were a great team, but Evan Williams had a shocker that night. So Evan Williams was out, which again... I think you have to go to the modern era.
Yeah.
You know, it starts, again, it's pretty obvious. I apologise for that. But rather than talking about goalkeepers, I'd quite like to talk about the goalkeeping coach. I think Stevie Woods is a slight pal of mine. I think he's just done he's an amazing goalkeeping coach. Never tells me anything, so I don't really know what goes on. I think I've asked him a million times, who's your favourite Celtic goalie? He'd never tell me that. But all I know is he takes... good goalkeepers or average goalkeepers and turns them into great goalkeepers. And obviously the two, well, Craig Gordon's a great example, but Gordon's a pretty good goalkeeper. But he basically, Stevie got him off the scrap heap. But it comes down to Boric or Foster. It just does. And again, it's a toss-up. I probably Foster, for the simple reason that my son, His first game was a shocker. It was St Johnstone at home. We lost 1-0. But his second ever game was the Barcelona 2-1. And I mean, it wasn't what Forster's greatest game, you know, for certain. But that he kind of just stuck with me. He's just a brilliant shot stopper. Not great with distribution, but I get, you know, it's everything you want in a goalkeeper. You know, so reliable, saves a lot of penalties.
So many.
Harry Brady's always great with this stuff. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's approaching 50%, which is it's astonishing. He didn't get him off a scrap heap at Newcastle. I had to pay £3 million for him, but, you know, Stevie Woods just turned him into, a world-class goalkeeper. And the fact when he left, went to Southampton, he kind of lost his way. I just think it says a lot. I don't think Stevie was a good enough goalkeeper to make my Celtic. Why did he play for Celtic? But it would have to be of the three great Stevie Woods projects. I think Forster's probably the best. So he's my goalkeeper. But with a nod to the good old days, Evan Williams, who was a great goalkeeper in my memory, but turns out wasn't that good after all.
Okay, in the grand Boric v Forster debate, I do always fall down with Forster. I'm very
pro Forster.
I think, much like Strachan's era, I remember Boric being basically perfect for 18 months and then a big fall away. And that third Strachan season, we kind of got away with one. You know, we won it on the last day of the season, but Boric just started making mistakes. And by the end, he was making mistakes far too often. And for me, his legacy was sullied by those latter months and ultimately us losing a title. And we haven't had that with Forster. We've just had 10 in a row or 9 in a row with Forster. So.
There's a bit too much nonsense with Boric. I know, like, I sound like an old codger here, but I can't be bothered with all the crap, you know. Speaking of memories, I was at that, he saved a penalty from Saha. Was it Saha in the Man United? I mean, he was part of a, you know, one of the sort of three or four great Celtic memories. So, he's a great goalie, but I couldn't be bothered with all the nonsense, to be honest. I'm kind of bored with that. And Forster, he is a no-nonsense kind of guy. By the way, have you ever been in near him at all? Forster.
Yes, I swear to God. In a bar with him once.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. It's just different species. Actually, I've hung about, not hung about, but I've been around some NBA players.
Yeah.
I knew a guy who knew Dirk Nowitzki. You ever heard of Dirk Nowitzki? It was a German boy for the Dallas Mavericks. Forster reminded me of him. It's like you go to the Olympics and you go to the Olympic Village to interview some the rowers, and it is just like walking onto the set of Avatar, you know. And Forster's he's one of those kind of people, just incredible.
I'm torn between telling two stories at this point because you mentioned Stevie Woods and we've mentioned Forster. I'll tell the Stevie Woods observation. I was in a bar with them all one time, and I can honestly say, in a room full of sort of celebrities and quasi celebrities and, you know, famous people and whatnot, Stevie Woods was the only person in the room that looked me in the eye and spoke to me like I was a human being. And I fell in love with the guy. And I just thought, what a great guy. And I've been so pleased that, you know, 10 years have come and gone, and he's just a guy that does a great job. And I know, you know, personally, over my tiny experience with him, good guy.
Unbelievable. Just couldn't do enough for people, you know. I never. I think he did a podcast a few years ago. I don't know whose podcast it was, but I think that's been it. Always in the background. Actually, I think it was, I saw a picture from the Lennon, Thompson, Gary Parker management team, and Stevie there, you know. Mialby, Thompson, Parker, Lennon, Stevie Woods.
Yeah. All right, so Stevie Woods is the goalkeeper in your team.
There he is.
that is a twist. Nobody saw that coming. Right, okay, so your flexible back four, starting from which side?
We're going to start from the right-hand side.
Okay, who's your man?
I haven't been that blessed with brilliant right-backs, I don't think, over the years. Again, you know, Didier Gatt, maybe, Jim Craig. Anyway, James Forrest.
One after Jim Craig. Come on, with a beard.
Come on. I told you before we started, my memory's a shocker.
The greatest right-back we've ever had.
Oh, Danny. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, Danny was a great right-back. Really good. I mean, obviously not better than Sandy Jardine. My right back is James Forrest, right?
That is bonkers, but I'm loving it.
I tell you why, okay? My back four is going to go to back three, right? And I've got three great defenders. So, you know, the way Celtic have always played, I want them to play. We need to be putting pressure on the other team.
Yeah.
Defensively, I saw Forest play, if you remember, we lost 2-1 to Bayern Munich. Was it 2-1?
Yeah.
I was at home. And Forrest was up against, I think it was Alaba that night. And I swear to goodness me, he was defensively, I mean, he just had that boy on toast. But he pushed him back. I thought he did a brilliant all-round job.
Yeah.
Defensively and in an attacking sense. So the way I want to play, as I say, I've got three strong defenders. I want Forrest really not playing as a traditional right-back, obviously, because, I mean, he's not a great tackler. But he covers a lot of ground. He's fast. As he's proved on occasion, he can play, as he proved on that night, he can play, against world-class players and contain them. Although the second goal, Alaba did get past him. I can't remember who scored it for them, but they got the cross in. But I think Forrest could do an adequate job defensively, but he's there really to push on, to facilitate my adaptation, to promote the sense that we are an all-out attacking team. And the guys I have in front of him I've changed it now, but I was originally going to have a left footer on the right side.
Right, okay.
So he would have been cutting inside, as he did when he did play for Celtic, and there would have been plenty of space for Forrest to go down that right channel.
Yeah.
But I still think, in fact, as I'm talking, I might swap my two wide players to facilitate that role for Forrest. So there you go, James Forrest. Whilst accepting his not defensive deficiencies, I still think what he brings to the team what I want to bring to the team down that right side.
Yeah, this would be gung-ho, but I'm all for that.
Well, I think I've got a lot of defensive cover, and I think I don't have two sitters, but I've got my two in front of the back four. One's a sitter, one pushes on, and I think, I think my guy in front of the back four, I think he can cover for, because he's a real good workhorse, and I think he can... He was a very team-oriented player, so I think he can support Forrest when defensive work is needed to be done, and I think Forrest brings a lot in an attacking sense. There you go.
Okay, I'm loving that. Okay, who's your first centre-half? Right-sided, I'm guessing.
I knew this. As soon as I talk about this guy, I always start crying. It's just unbelievable. Hang on a minute. I can't believe this. My all-time sporting hero. All-time. It's Billy Mainio.
Caesar.
Fucking hell, Anthony. This is... I just... Every time I talk about Billy Mainio, every time I think about him, he's just my... I need to cut this out, man.
I'll jump in. I'll do some filler here. When I was coaching for the community Celtic teams, one of my beats was Rookin Glen, and it was one of Billy McNeil's grandsons was part of my pool of players. That I was coaching, and I was the guy cutting about in a Celtic shell suit and stuff. And I remember Caesar used to come and pick up his grandson, and I just kind of stared at him from a distance, like
that's it.
And I think I nodded and said hello to him, but I never opened up a chat. I never tried to force myself upon him. But he used to come and pick up the boy, and I'd just look at him as if, wow, that's who that is,
It's it's like a godlike figure.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to meet him a couple of times. I met him with my kid at a Celtic game. We were just leaving the ground or whatever, and he was there with his wife, and it was clearly at that point he was diminishing. Yeah. But it was just so brilliant. That now could beat him. This is just tragic. I can't fucking believe this. I must be in some terribly fragile emotional state. But I do. This is not unusual. Whenever I get to thinking about Billy Mainio, because when I first started going to Celtic, I mean, it was post 67. So he was this colossal figure,
Already, yeah.
Already. And he was just, I can't remember much about him. I mean, I've obviously seen a lot of footage and all that. I can't remember that much about him as a player. Obviously, he was a good... I mean, I've seen bits and pieces on YouTube. Actually, I don't know why. I was watching the 4-0 Scottish Cup final earlier in the week. That was a rough old game, by the way. I didn't realise how... Because Rangers basically tried to kick Celtic off the park. Anyway, Mainio scored the first goal. But just a great... Just a... It's just, to me, he's just Celtic.
Yeah.
Clearly a brilliant, brilliant player. Solid. Can score your goals. Organises the team. I don't think, again, my knowledge of him, I mean, I'm allowed to pick him. because he's within my ear. But, you know, I could tell you a lot more about Paul Elliott than I could about Billy McNeil.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, games that he played or whatever. But he just, I've not been very articulate about this, but he just represents Celtic to me. He is, as I say, my all-time hero. Do you know what? I didn't even realise this until a few years ago, that he came from Lithuanian.
Yeah, I picked up on some of that. Yeah, immigrants,
which was, and there was a little, I can't remember, I tweeted it out or something a couple of years back, but, you know, it was this whole, you know, anti-immigration crap and whatever, and just, you know, Scotland's always had a pretty good, you know, I'm not into Scottish exceptionalism very much, but we've always had pretty, welcome people, you know, even in a footballing sense. You remember, you know, was it Hal Stewart at Morton back in the early 60s? But, you know, a lot of Scandinavian players. And so McNeil kind of represented the best of Celtic, and he kind of represents the kind of best of Scotland.
Yeah.
So I just liked him as much for who he was as a player. He was clearly a great player. So he would be my captain. Again, he'd probably have to play on the left side because my other centre half is not very good on his left side.
Right. So even recently, there was a thing that I think I certainly had forgotten, that post 88, post Celtic management, he actually went into being a commentator. And I was watching Scotland Sweden from 1996 at Ibrox when John McGinley scored the great goal, and, you know, we beat Sweden with a pre Celtic Henrik Larsson looking bored on the bench, thinking, I'm going to come and conquer this shithole one day. Big time. But yeah, it was Billy McNeil was the commentator, the co-commentator on it. It was just really cool to hear, because I remember him doing that and stuff like that, and always enjoying knowing that he was a Celtic guy, you know, because so many people, you know, commentators are Huns and all that.
Anyway, Billy McNeil, I pathetic. I mean, people are just, I'm going to
get started again. Right, next player
is, again, hardly original, but Virgil van Dijk. I mean, he's not great on his left side, but I remember when we signed him, and the first game was in, I mean, I'm sure everybody's heard these stories about when he turns up for training and Parker, he's 5 minutes in, Parker looks at Lennon, and Lennon looks at Parker and goes, what the fuck? What have we got here? But I remember watching the very first game. It was some dog shit, you know, training park in Austria, pre-season game. I was watching it on Celtic TV, and I swear to God, straight away, phenomenal. Just what a player. What an athlete. So I remember that about him. Distribution goals, everything you'd want from a defender, even then. But I think it was the Karagandy game. I think he had one bad game for Celtic, or one, you know, genuinely kind of mediocre game. And I just remember listening to Radio Clyde. I'll never forget this. And it was, I think it was Mark Guidi or something. Yeah, I don't rate him. And I just thought, fucking hell. So I remember that about Virgil van Dijk. He was just a, we were lucky to have him, lucky to see him.
Yeah.
Brilliant player. So he would do, you know, when you have two centre backs, you have the defender and you have the ball player.
Yeah, footballer.
So you have the footballer. So there you go. I don't think it doesn't get any better than that, I don't think, than those two. So you get Forrest, McNeil, Van Dijk, or Van Dijk, McNeil. That's three, and then we'll move on to our left back. I mean, I don't think I can add to the canon on Virgil van Dijk. I mean, he's just a...
I've just a thought that I've never said on a podcast before. I remember, I think I was down in London, might have been for a gig that I was doing, or I might have just been visiting pals. It was somewhere around about the time where Van Dijk had signed. And I remember, I think it was one of these ones where I've dragged my English mates to a pub to watch the Celtic game. You know, because I think we were going to see Fulham or something like that. We were going to a game, but Celtic were kicking off at midday. So I was like, all right, you know, we'll find a pub in Fulham and watch the Celts. And all my pals are like, oh, for fuck's sake, we'll do it. You know, we'll humour him. And then it was the game, I think, where he just got the ball against St Johnston and said, this mob are shite.
Yeah.
I'm just literally going to run at them.
Yeah.
And then toe bash it in the bottom corner from like 25 yards. It's just like, it's such a surreal goal, because at no point did it make sense. You know, that he didn't strike it brilliantly hard or anything. He just kind of poked it. And all my pals were just like, who's that guy? And I'm like, well, that's Virgil van Dijk. You know, it's, you're going to hear more about this guy, you know?
Well, a couple of things are interesting about him. One, you know, how did we get him so cheaply? Apparently the story was that, well, again, I'm spreading scurrilous rumours that he was just a mad, mad shagger. I mean, you're 6'4", you've got the body of Adonis, the face of an angel, you got a few quid in the bank. I mean, would you not be a mad shagger? I mean,
I am, and I have none of these things, you know.
So that's why. So the rap on Virgil, was it Groningen? I can't remember. Was it? So the rap on him was he didn't take it seriously. You know, he was just a bit of a Billy Big Time, not Billy Big Time, but couldn't avoid taking advantage of his natural gifts. So that's why we got him. There's that for 2 million, and then they're also, well, why did we sell him so cheaply? I mean, just. It's I see the latest one with Kieran Tierney as well. You know, what a bargain. Somebody's calling Kieran Tierney a bargain in the English context, yeah. 25 million. So there you go. What about that for a first four picks? What we're looking at. I mean,
it's a good team
so far.
I've seen most of them. So who's your left back?
Well, what a good defender. Because what happens when Forrest bombs on?
Yeah.
Backs, you've got to shift over. I think it comes down to good defenders. Across the back, we're big. I like big players, but right. across the back, we are big, tough. Obviously, Tierney's tough, but he's a bit small, especially given what's in front of him. So I'm going to go for Tommy Gemmell.
Tommy Gemmell. 2 weeks in a row, he was in Lackey's team last week.
Well, he'd see him. Lackey would see him. Just a brilliant player. My memories of score your goal, Tommy Gemmell. Score your goal. I think he left in, was it 73? Can't remember.
And he goes to Dundee and wins the cup, the League Cup. Yeah.
But my meme is just of him being tough and big and pretty decent defensively. Funnily enough, as a kid, my main memory of him was playing for Scotland. Remember that game in Germany, the 3-2 game? Scotland, that's just a great, Alan Gilzean scored twice for Scotland. I think it was 68 or something. And Tommy Gemmell got sent off for chasing UV Zeller across the field and giving the biggest fucking boot up the arse. It was absolutely
brilliant.
Brilliant. Plus, again, won a European Cup winner's medal, scored a goal in the European Cup final, was part of a great team, got to, I think he played in this 1970 European Cup final. Just a really good, again, I understand I'm not drowning you in detail here, but again, a good, tough, big defender, perfect for the team that I'm setting up just now. Will get you a goal, is capable of, you know, if you're completely dominating a team, then Gemmell is capable of taking part in that, you know, attacking flood, as he did in Lisbon.
In my bohemian days, hanging around Glasgow pretending I was a writer.
Oh, aye.
I of course, as we all did, dreamt of writing the great Lisbon Lion, you know, sort of biopic or whatever. I also saw myself as casting myself as Tommy Gemmell.
Really?
I've got a big enough nose. You know, I've got a good right peg, good left peg. I could have filled the role. And I sort of, what was that? The Damned United film.
Yes.
When they made that and Stephen Graham played Billy Bremner. It's like the worst Scottish accent.
Actually, I've got a good Billy Bremner story. Billy Bremner, he used, when we lived in Stirling, his girlfriend at the time, we lived next door to his girlfriend. And I used to play football with Billy Bremner when I was a kid. Out the back, Billy Bremner would come to his future in-laws.
Would he pull out of tackles in such a kick about, or was he?
I know.
Pretty hard.
He's a pretty hard wee guy. So there you go. That's
anyway,
my back four.
I saw myself as an actor version of Tommy Gemmell. Alas, that film was never made. That script was never written. Right, so moving on. Who's going to shield this back four?
Well, I've got an older time player and I've got a modern player. And again, it's a two. Actually, it's like a pivot, isn't it? Brendan Rodgers would call it a pivot. It's either a 2-1 or a 1-2. And I think, you know, so you've got this two and then you've got the guy sitting in front, the 10, right? So I'm looking at a four and an eight. And the first one of the two is Cal McGregor.
His second appearance in the show.
Is that right? And yeah. I think he's worthy. We've had a lot of good midfield players over the years. And, you know, players that my time as a Celtic, because as I say, I've travelled so much and, you know, I've been in Glasgow for periods. And the longest time I was in Glasgow was in that early 80s. So, you know, it was a Paul McStay, you know, it's a Glasgow Uni Celtic supporters bus. And Paul McStay was the guy.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to illustrate is that I've thought about this, you know. And it seems a bit easy to pick a guy from the modern era, but what I'm trying to say is, I really do think Callum McGregor is that good.
Yeah.
And so right now he's not. There's a big debate kicking around on social media about, you know, Brown. But if you remember, under Rodgers, you know, that the last, when we didn't start well and Brown was injured and McGregor sat in that, took over that holding role, that sitting role, I thought we were brilliant then. I think it was the second season. I can't remember. But I think, you know, McGregor, to me, you know, physically, he doesn't have the attributes of a kind of Brown or whatever, or a bigger guy. But I do think he's got the intelligence to play that cover role, and I think he proved it. And I think because we are so defensively strong, you know, with McNeil and Van Dijk, especially with Van Dijk there, I think, you know, whatever, if McGregor is overwhelmed, I think we can cover for him. And then I think he's so intelligent, he's a very, very intelligent user of the ball. So I guess it would be a controversial pick for anybody, but I think he is that good. He's such a great user of the ball, very intelligent footballer, good team guy. Always liked him, actually. Always liked him. And I think you've always been underestimated. Isn't that amazing? Oh, he went to Bristol Rovers. Oh, well, he can't be that good. Well, I think he scored 11 goals at Bristol Rovers.
He took the piss. Yeah, Notts County.
Was it Notts County?
He absolutely took the piss down there.
And then I think came back. I think we came back. Didn't he score twice against Legia Warsaw in that game over there?
Yeah, he immediately started cutting in from the right and scoring goals. But it's that weird thing that, remember when Bastian Schweinsteiger played at Euro 2004? He was this, you know, peroxide head little shitty winger, kind of like a McGeady kind of player.
Yeah.
And he evolved into being a World Cup winning centre mid. And that's kind of what McGregor's done. He's gone from being a McGeady type, you know, you play on the wing and do your little thing, to being the absolute beating heart of the best Celtic team in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And he should be given, you know, the responsibility. It's time for him to take the matrix of power from Brown and
of course it is.
You know?
And you see him, I mean, you think to the... Again, not to keep it, you know, the whole recency bias, but remember the game just before the shutdown at Motherwell that night. I mean, I thought that night he was just immense. And when he scored that goal, you could see how much it meant to him. Yeah. And you can see how much respect he gets from the other players, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, it sounds stupid, and this is stupid, obviously, but like, isn't that, it's not in the same breath as, I'm almost embarrassed to say, but that kind of Pirlo kind of thing, you know, that's where he belongs. And he's proved it. I mean, the stats, anybody wants to go and look at this stuff, you know, Duco James on Twitter, I say this guy all the time, his analysis of the Brown or McGregor in that sitting role is absolutely fascinating. And it's irrefutable that it's time for McGregor to take over there. It's the kind of unsung hero thing. But he's not, because I'm here singing. He's singing about him. But he is just a brilliant, brilliant player. And the kind of player that every kind of team really, really, really needs. I absolutely love him. So I think
team playing football the way it should be played.
Yes. Because
he's the living embodiment of that.
Well, and... you know, within a team of 11, everybody has assigned roles. But they got, you've got to be a great footballer as well. You have to be a really good footballer. And McGregor certainly is a great footballer. I just wish, I mean, of course, if he was 6 inches taller, I mean, he'd be playing, you know, he wouldn't be at Celtic. He would be, actually, he may well not be at Celtic, because I mean, he's certainly good enough to play, you know, anywhere else. You know, you go the English Premier League's the obvious one, but really just a smashing player. And again, we'll get you a goal.
He's a guy that, for me, you know, we win 10 in a row, he has the, you know, carte blanche to go wherever he wants. Do you know what I mean? He goes with my blessing.
Yeah.
When players leave, when I don't think they've earned the move, the Simon Donnellys, the Phil O'Donnells, they piss me off. The Liam Millers, they piss me off. But, I mean, even if he was to go tomorrow, it would break my heart, but he's earned it. But if he goes at the end of this season, 10 in a row in the bag, and Barcelona or someone really good come and look at him, you wouldn't be surprised, and he'd go with all the praise and applause that he could get.
I'm not sure. I don't think Barcelona. Well, again, there's that kind of rank snobbery, isn't there? How old is he now? I don't know. Is he...
late 20s? So 27?
I don't think he's
at the end of the day. I mean, at the end of the day, Barcelona... they looked at Larsson for long enough and then said, well, why the hell not?
Yeah.
And Barca are heading towards a period of transition. But I don't mean to get bogged down in Barcelona, but you get my point. He could play for any big team.
Yeah. No, he's a... yeah. Smash him. If there wasn't this kind of slight snobbery about Scottish players playing in Scotland. But then, although, again...
maybe that will burn away with, you know, like last night you literally had the Andy Robertson, Kieran Tierney derby. You know, two of the biggest teams in England and two Scots playing next to each other. Two Scots that would look, if they were asked, you know, who's the best centre mid you've played for, would probably say, well, that McGregor boy's pretty damn good. You know?
Yeah. I guess in the era of analytics becoming more and more important and, you know, central to how players are elevated or players are selected, you know, club spy players. And maybe that kind of snobbery, that regional snobbery, will become less and less. I don't know if it'll become less and less in time for Cal McGregor, but...
At it. Goals against Zenit, Bayern, Rangers, Cup finals. You know, it's always big goals and good goals, you know? So, yeah, brilliant, Cal McGregor. Right, who's next to him?
Tricky one, this. McGregor being the sitter, I'm going to go with Bobby Murdoch.
Right. Again, second appearance in the show.
Who picked it?
Lackey.
He's just probably picked Lisbon Lions, didn't he?
Yeah.
Again, Lackey would know a lot more about Bobby Murdoch than I would, you know, and, you know, specifics. But again, he was around. He was playing when I went, when I started going. Especially when I was a kid. My first ever league game would have been 1960. I always thought it was 1968, Dundee at home, 2-0 Celtic. John Hughes scored twice. I could never really, when I was a kid, John Hughes and Bobby Murdoch were interchangeable to me.
Yeah, they did look like each other. There's
just a brilliant, brilliant footballer, but again, just a great passer of the ball, you know, brilliantly skillful, scored goals for fun.
Hard.
But a very, very, big. You know, he was a bit overweight, I think. Let's face it. I mean, that was always his problem, wasn't it? I think Steen got rid of him in 73 or whatever, because he basically had a touch of the league Griffiths, just said right enough. But you see who was it? Who called him the complete footballer? I think some Italian manager. It might have been the boy at Inter Milan back in the day. Again, I understand that. But a really just a great footballer, great, you know, good attacking footballer, scored you goals, could do a bit of defensive work. That's really it. I just, again, from my memory back then, he was just a colossal figure. You know, in kind of same, you know, the same pantheon as McNeil and Evan Williams. Not Evan Williams. Anyway, but that's my two there. That's my two set. But one sitting, because in the current Celtic, you would say that Brown and McGregor would be your two setters, but McGregor's the one that has a tendency to go forward.
Yeah.
So in this team, I'm McGregor sitting, and Murdoch is the one that goes forward. Brilliant, great passer.
Brilliant.
You go back on YouTube, it's just you can see stuff, and if you read about him, just a brilliant passer of the ball.
Yeah.
Get you goals. So that would be my second choice. So
okay.
Not a bad two.
This is an excellent team. So, and then we've got a three up top, right? So do you want to work your way from left to right or right to left?
This has been a nightmare. So I did a team 5 minutes before the show. I thought I knew what I was doing. I was going to have Nakamura on the right. So first, just a brilliant creative player. I loved him. I'd been living in California back the early part of the... Well, for the Martin O'Neill years.
Right.
I was in California. And then I came back to Glasgow. And Nakamura was just, 2006, whatever. He was, just a great, great player. Loved him. Loved what he represented. I don't know if I've told this story before, but we moved back and we lived in the West End. And we just got back. And it was a winter time. And I'm thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, why did we do that? We just left California. The sun was standing. You know, we're miserable. It was a Sunday morning, going down to get the bacon rolls on Byers Road and walking down, and I just see this three people walking down the street in Byers Road, wrapped up to the nines, looking absolutely more miserable than me. And it was Nakamura and his wife and their little kid. And I just thought, oh my God, you are a long way from home, sir.
Yeah.
Creative goals, just a wonderful, part of... Again, we spoke earlier about the Man United game. I mean, maybe the greatest goal ever. I don't know. Maybe the best Celtic goal I've ever seen. Probably. I mean, I don't know.
So good. Just it's one that every time you watch it, the trajectory is just ridiculous.
Unbelievable. You cannot beat a world-class goalie from 30. It shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. And on the night, I remember Letissier on Sky, Matt Letissier, who's a bit of a dick, but anyway, Matt Letissier saying that's the best free kick ever struck. And, you know, when Matt Letissier is saying that, on that occasion, you have to say, right, well, he hit some good ones. And it literally, you know, the mathematics of it, if you drew the lines and the curve and the up and the down, just bonkers.
I don't even know where we got him from or how we got him. It's a, such a weird... I know he came from Italy, didn't he, I think?
Yeah, he'd been at Regina or Reggiana, one of the two.
I mean, what an amazing bit of scouting, I'm assuming that. Yeah. I mean, just a brilliant bit of scouting. And I don't know why he left when he left. I guess it was his choice.
We'd lost the league, hadn't we? He'd done his 4 years, he'd made his cash, he'd proved his point. I mean, he's still playing in Japan now.
I know, yeah.
So, you know, realistically, we could have got a couple more years out of him.
And I've wanted because I wanted to create space for Forrest.
Yeah.
I wanted, you know, and Nakamura was good at that. He all, you know, coming off the right, under his left foot, you know, goals, Kamarnock and all, you know, just all that stuff. So I had him on the right, and then I just forgot. And I got to picking my three, that three, and I thought, well, I've got the number 10. That's absolutely bang on. Who can I put on the left? And then I've forgotten Jimmy Johnson.
Right, okay.
So I couldn't... Johnson, top three Celtic players of all time. I can't add to what people say about Jimmy Johnson, but, you know, if you look at the footage, when I was a kid, I was taken to games. I lived in Stirling, and my uncle Jim would take me on the Larbert Celtic supporters bus, and Johnson was the absolute. At that time, you know, early 70s, he was just superstar. You know, give him the ball and just watch him. Brilliant. Actually, you're looking back at old footage, you didn't realise he was his legs are like, the proverbial tree trunks, Johnson. I mean, he was a small guy. I don't think he was 5'5", 5'6", or whatever, but he was a big, you know, physical guy. So to accommodate Nakamura, who I just loved, I'm going to make the case that Johnson is such a brilliant footballer and so adaptable and so unpredictable that I can play Jinky on the left.
Oh, definitely. You could play as an inverted winger. No danger.
So, and that would be to, because I wanted Nakamura in the team. And I think Johnson, again, as I say, so adaptable, so unpredictable. I mean, if you look at the old footage from the De Stefano, you ever watch that stuff? The De Stefano testimonial game. Johnson that night. I mean, I don't know. Well, again, it's a testimonial game. It's an interesting story. You know, Steen hated to play the Lisbon Lions team after the one. He would very, very seldom play the Lisbon Lions team. And
For what reason?
He just didn't want. He was so aware of the aura,
right.
So he never wanted the Lisbon Lions to be beaten. He never wanted that 11 to be beaten.
Ah, right.
So Fallon would get. I think Fallon played in that Di Stefano game.
Right.
I mean, I could have played that night. I mean, Celtic were awesome, and Johnson was just. I mean, he was just go watch. I mean, if you have anybody listening to us hasn't seen it, I'm sure you have. If you're listening, you're sad to be listening to this. You're sad enough to be watching old Celtic videos on YouTube.
5 months into a global quarantine.
Yeah. Well,
we're all in the same boat. Yeah.
So there you go. That would be my two wide players. Kind of interchangeable, I guess. But Johnson, more adaptable, more unpredictable than Nakamura, less structured. I mean, again, I think Nakamura's not going to be, he's not going to be stopping anybody surging through your midfield, but he's going to be disciplined enough to do a little bit of work. And I guess Jinky's, he's not going to be in too much.
I could imagine, I mean, a modern equivalent, although I'm the biggest critic of who I'm going to mention, because I think he takes every second or third season off and is a bit of a shite bag, is Eden Hazard. And, you know, when he's at the peak of his powers, you know, he is a right footer coming in from the left that can go both ways and burn people. So you can imagine Jimmy Johnson just floating around, skinning people for fun.
Yeah.
Just running the show.
I'm just thinking, what a team this is, by the way.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's, what a team. Oh, wait, the 10, this, again, goosebumps. I'm not going to burst into tears this time, but I'm certainly got goosebumps. Ken Dalglish. When I started going, so early 70s, I said, I don't know if Dalglish played in the Partick Thistle Cup final.
I think he did.
Can't believe that. I'll never forget that. It's down at halftime, some drunk boy stumbles into the stadium. What's the score? 4-0. Yes! 4-0 at Partick Thistle, mate. I just remember crying all the way home in the Larbert Celtic supporters bus. But Kenny Dalglish, he was the... I shared a room with my brother. My poor mother, she said, you can we paint our room? Aye, on you go. So we painted our room, this vivid, bright green. And you won't remember, you wouldn't have been born at the time, but the Evening Times back then, the Saturday edition of the Evening Times used to come with a wraparound. And it was these colour, thick, really quite decent stock colour posters of Celtic Rangers players. It was brilliant. Lou McCarry and, yeah. You know, and we used to get all the... So if it was a Kenny Dalglish, we'd go and somehow we'd nick like six Evening Times from the newsagents or whatever. We'd get six tickets. So my room was this horrific, painted by me and my brother, horrific green, luminous green with all these Kenny Dalglish posters all over it. Brilliant, brilliant player. Goals. My first league game was against the Dundee game, but my first Celtic game was my grandmother, I spent quite a lot when I was growing up. My grandmother, she lived in a place called Pleen, which is an old mining village. But the most famous guy to come out of Pleen was a guy called Frank Beattie, who, a good footballer, ended up played a long time at Kilmarnock. Anyway, Frank Beattie's testimonial. My uncle Jim took me. Celtic won 7-2. Kenny Dalglish scored 6. I was a kid, right? Yeah. So that was it for me. Kenny Dalglish was the guy. Fast forward to 2015. I'm at the Masters. I'm walking across whatever fairway with a guy called Matt Dickinson, chief sports writer of the Times. Great guy, Matt. And who's walking towards us on the crosswalk but Kenny Dalglish with Dave King. Dave King, can you fucking believe that? And Dickie had written some column about Kenny Dalglish, slaughtering Kenny Dalglish, and they'd fallen out. And then, but you're at the Masters. So Kenny goes, how you doing, Dicko? So they get talking and all that. And I'm standing there. It's Kenny fucking Dalglish. I'm whispering to him, it's Kenny Dalglish. So anyway, later that night, we're down in downtown Augusta and we're Rick Broadbent from another guy from the Times. We're sitting having a pizza. Who walks in? Kenny Dalglish and his missus. And we're in a big table and the next thing, Kenny Dalglish sits down and his missus and we have a pizza with Kenny Dalglish and his missus. It was incredible. It was like an hour and a half with Kenny Dalglish. I couldn't believe how smart the guy was, how sharp he was. And I kept on saying to his wife, and once we got kind of comfortable, I said, how come you married a Rangers fan? Because she's a big... I said, what'd you marry a Rangers fan for? Anyway, so I say to him, eventually I work up the courage to say, Kenny, you're one of my all-time heroes, whatever. And he's like, whatever. And I say, first game I ever went to as a kid, it was Frank Beattie's testimonial. Celtic won 8-2 and you scored 6. And he said, no, it wasn't. 7-2. It was 7-2. So my whole life I'd gone through thinking it was 8-2. It was Kenny Dalglish who told me it was actually 7-2. Then I went and looked it up and lo and behold, it was 7-2. But he was a great, great player. So skillful. Scored a lot of goals. I was heartbroken when he left. I mean, what can you imagine? Was it 74? But he was a transactional kind of guy, Dalglish. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's clearly a guy with a lot of empathy and all that. But he knew his self-worth.
Yeah.
And he was never a Celtic fan. But he was a great player. I mean, he was the fulcrum of that, you know, post Lisbon Lions team. And it's gutty to see him go. I mean, it's amazing now. Here we are, 40 years later, and you can still remember when he was leaving. You can still remember how much he left for. I mean, 400 grand at the time was a decent amount of cash.
But like Van Dijk earlier, you know, it still wasn't enough. You know, we were still
yeah. And the thing about Dalglish is as well, again, just to the adaptability of my lineup. I mean, Dalglish, you could play behind. You can play off a main man, main striker. But he can push on if you want to play two up front. And he was a guy who, you know, wasn't a kind of selfish player. He was just a great player who took his share. He took his share of goals, took his share of possession. But he wasn't like a greedy player or anything. He was a really good team, but he was quite prepared to set guys up. So I would have him sitting in there. I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of choices in there, but right off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who kind of really comes close to Dalglish in that role.
My first awareness of him, because obviously the age I am, he was already, by the time I kind of start thinking, he was already player manager at Liverpool. And even from a very young age, I'm aware that there's this guy who gets to pick the team, but is also the best player.
Yeah.
And occasionally it's just like, these assholes need me again. And, you know, he throws himself on, scores a winner and stuff like that. He's so damn good.
Dicko from I had met him, Dalglish, but again, very tangentially. It was a 95 season. Remember it came down to Blackburn?
Yeah, yeah.
Man United were playing at West Ham. I can't remember who Blackburn were playing. But the day before, I was at the Guardian. I was working at the Guardian at the time. I was at the Guardian at the time, and they said, the sports editor said, I'll go up to Manchester and go and do the press conferences because our usual guys off. So Dick was already based up there. I called him and said, I'm coming up on Friday. He said, oh, great. We've got a press versus Blackburn backroom staff on Friday. I said, what, the day before? The He says, yeah, you can play if you like. So we all pitch up in the morning, and it's 11 of us against Blackburn. And so we're all lining up, a couple of good things. So Dalgleish is playing, Ace of Hartford's playing, Ray Hartford, sadly, RIP, Alan Irvine. And I remember Dalgleish saying, we didn't have a goalie. Get one of the kids. And Hartford turns and goes, Shay, come on. It was Shay Given. So Shay Given, 16-year-old Shay Given comes over, or 15-year-old, whatever he was. Anyway, so I was playing in a defensive two against Kenny Dalgleish. we lost 16-0. So, but it was funny, and afterwards it's in a conversation, you know, I'd never said anything, but we got in a conversation with Dennis Kennedy Dalgleish, and I mentioned Dennis Conaghan. We're talking about goalkeepers. I said, I used to like Dennis Conaghan. He said, he was not a bad goalie. I don't think he agreed. Anyway, but Dalgleish was a great player for Celtic, and you know, you can't, as I say, kind of transactional kind of figure who was always going to move on. We did well money wise. But I think he could do a job for us there, you know, in creating and helping our main striker.
And the striker is...
Ah, so boring, isn't it? I mean, come on.
It is getting a bit samey, but I'm impressing myself with my ability to riff on this guy. I was blessed I saw so many of his games, you know, live and stuff.
Well, actually, you know what? I have got two names down. I mean, it's... To me, it has to be Larson, obviously, right?
Yeah, obviously.
But I would, you know, I could put Dalgleish in there instead of Larson. I would be quite happy with that. So Larson came in, was it 98, 97? 97.
97, yeah.
Yeah. And so, obviously, part of the great 98, top 10 in a row and all that. But for the main part of the, I was away. So I didn't see a lot of Larson live. I didn't, you know.
Right, okay. That justifies you leaving him out. I'm not.
You can't, you know, because that was at the time where. So the early part of I was in California, and Fox Sports actually had a contract with the Scottish. It's absurd now, because you're living, you know, trying to watch Scottish football on American TV is impossible.
Yeah.
You can't get it. You've got to go online. Again, that's fair enough. But back then, you would see quite a few games, you know, and, you know, the great Martin O'Neill Cup runs and all that, the European Cup runs, or certainly the UEFA Cup run. Actually, that UEFA Cup game I watched, that's probably Larson's, but I watched it. I was covering golf. I was in Fort Worth, Texas. Annika Sörenstam was playing on a PGA Tour event that week. The game was on the Wednesday, and she was playing on the Thursday. And I had to go drive all the way from Colonial. This is boring. But anyway, to drive, and I found a bar in Fort Worth, which is a real shite hole, by the way. So I would never go there. But it was showing, it was just kind of opening up, and it was just me sitting in front of this TV screen watching the game. Great player. 600 grand from Feyenoord. I mean, I don't know him. You can wax lyrical about him, but I didn't see a lot of him live. That's my only thing. But I mean, I saw enough of him on TV. I see my mate gave him a golf lesson. My mate's got videos of him. My mate Gary used to give him golf lessons up at the place up in Clyde Bank. And I say, what was he like? I said, he was a good player, but he wouldn't do anything I told him. Suppose if you're Henrik Larsson, you know, who's going to tell you what to do? The only competition, and you can't push out Larsson because he wasn't there long enough, is Dembele. I really liked Dembele. Again, I guess that's recency bias, but I was...
My Dembele issue is his appearance rate. Over two seasons, he played 66% of the games he should have played. And that grated with me.
Well, you got to remember, part of it was he was a kind of peripheral player until the Rangers game.
But that wasn't, you know, he'd already scored in Europe before then. He's hit a penalty against some team. I was at the game. You know, I get that, but he was also, you know, he missed the run in that year. Missed large sections of the next, and it always bothered me. And also that the idea that he never hid the fact that he was going to leave.
Yeah.
It's one of the mysteries now that he loves us so much.
Isn't that?
He didn't seem to appreciate it at the time, but he obviously did.
Yeah, you're right. It's a weird one, isn't it? Why he does absolutely I think he's more probably he's realised, well, I've got my move now. He can kind of relax in his own skin now. You know, he's not sort of looking over the, you know, what's over there.
Yeah.
Or maybe he is. I mean, I don't know. But he was those were just brilliant times, though, weren't they? It's just great times. And he just seems to be in such a central figure. You always go back to the you know, turning Clint Hill inside out and all, you know, all that stuff. And of all the kind of that 5-1 game was that's got to be one of everybody's favourite games.
I don't, if you had to pick between the 5-1, the 5-0, and the, was it 4-0 in the cup?
Yes.
I mean, one's your favourite, you know?
That 5-1, because of the hat-trick, the Stuart Armstrong goal.
Yeah.
That was
I think part of the thing that annoys with the 5-0 game is that it should have been a 10-0 game.
Oh, it should have been.
Do you know what I mean? We've got 30 minutes to go. We're about to break history, and then we pump the brakes. Whereas the 5-1 was a bit like the 6-2 in that it kind of, you know, right up to the end, it felt exciting and fun. Dembele's hat-trick that day. I remember, I think I tweeted at the time, as he scores the hat-trick against the Huns on his first attempt, it's like, steady on, pal. You know, Henrik never managed that. And you've done it at the first outing. You know, where do you go from there?
So, again, he was there for a short space of time. Again, a very kind of transactional figure, clearly. But I really, he's just a totemic in that, you know, that short spell, which was real fun. That was a real brilliant season. But again, Larsson's body of work. I guess if you do 150 of these shows...
No, 60,000 is the plan. Every fan's getting their own one.
So the, you know, Larsson's going to make 59,897, isn't he? Which makes for kind of boring listening. But it's just so hard to get away from. And you're just kind of so proud of what he did when he left.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea, I remember watching that Champions League final. They were losing. Arsenal were going to win that, I think. And he just completely turned the game. I can't remember much about his Man United career, but he did, you know, he did pretty well.
He scored in every tournament. He scored an FA Cup goal, a league goal, and a Champions League goal, and off he went.
It's weird, though. I wonder why did he stay so long? It's just so,
He was getting paid. He was the highest paid player in the UK, basically, at the time.
Oh, was he?
Well, there was a reason.
That's an extraordinary thing to say now, you think. I mean, the idea that Celtic would have the highest paid
player. Absolutely absurd. Yeah, we are basically the Man City of Britain at that point. Absolutely mental.
Yeah. Actually, I remember him a little bit. I remember being quite surprised that we got him, because he made a little bit of an impression at Feyenoord. And, you know, it was a kind of, the Wim Jansen thing was that was a connection. So that's why he talked him into coming to us. But he was a... Great.
I think one of my favourite things about having him was that it gave, in an era when Scotland were not qualifying for anything, you know, at least certainly Euro 2000. Yeah. When I was at the 6-2 game, I was wearing my Sweden shirt.
Sweden top. Oh, look at you.
You know, which my sister stole and lost. Let that go. Let it go. I had several Sweden shirts over the Larsson Mjällby era, and it was always great to sit down and watch a Sweden game and for Larsson to score and be like, oh, he's our guy, you know.
What were Sweden like back then? I'm guessing utilitarian, were they?
Well, I mean, they had a young Zlatan and a brilliant Henrik Larsson, so how bad could they be, you know?
You are right. You were just proud of him, you know. He's one of ours.
And I remember the first time I flew to America, because I was coaching in North Carolina. So this would have been... No, it was the second year I went to coach. My dad was driving me to Glasgow Airport. And you know those sort of under roads that go... You know the big bridge that goes over the... Is it the Kingston Bridge?
Yes. Well, where are you coming from?
We're weaving away from east to west towards the airport.
Oh, no, Jamaica Street Bridge.
Probably. But anyway... I just remember it was Sweden were playing, because remember that World Cup was in South Korea, Japan, so it was crazy early in the morning.
Yeah.
And Larsson scored two against Senegal. And I just remember me and my dad like celebrating it in the car like it was a Celtic game, you know? Larsson scored, yay!
And he's dirty Senegalese Huns.
El Hadj Diouf, I don't like you. I don't know why yet. I don't know why, but it's coming. I've got a sixth sense.
What a team, though.
Yeah, outstanding. The front four. I'm loving the front four because I can... in this sort of Cruyffian total football brain, you could just see that coming together. You could see Dalglish wanting to play next to Nakamura and Larsson and Jinky. Yeah. They would all, that'd be brilliant.
Wouldn't that just be a fantastic?
Lawrence, that is a belter of a team.
There you go.
Do you think they'd win in Seville?
Actually, let me think. Oh, aye. We wouldn't make the, well, better in goals, wouldn't make the defensive mistakes. I don't think. Well, Virgil's just, nobody's beating him, you know.
Yeah.
I think McGregor would do a number on Deco. I think, yeah, we just have too much for them. We would just over.
Nakamura would score a free kick at some point.
Of course,
that's,
he would.
That's one goal advantage right there.
Right, so you've got the two, obviously the two Larsson goals are already in the bank. So we've got that. Nakamura scores a free kick. That's Tommy Gemmell's hitting one in from 25 yards, isn't he? Obviously.
Did we let in a penalty? Did we let in a penalty in Seville?
Don't think so.
Well, if we did, Foster would have saved it.
No, we didn't. No, that team might win the pound for pound.
No, it's winning everything.
It's winning everything, isn't it?
Their powers.
Yeah. My only slight, as I said to you at the start, I'm just slightly concerned. You know, the back three is fine. You know, I'm just we might be slightly undersized a little bit. You know, McGregor, well, Murdoch's big enough. Jinky's, you know, knackered.
Yeah,
we might be a little bit
your
light.
Point. Yeah.
We might be ever so slightly lightweight, but you can't, you know, who do we have that was 6 foot tough midfielder wise, good, you know, good passer of the ball? Have we had a player like that?
Your description, I'm going to throw it out and you're going to laugh at me. Vikhorst was a nice big player.
Yeah, he was. I liked him. I really did. I thought he was a good player.
Obviously, there's levels and, you know, I think he's making an all time 11, but he was a fine big player.
Until remember Pearson? I thought he was a decent player.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
He didn't go to Derby. But that would be my only slight concern, that we might get bullied out in midfield a little bit. But my was the strength defensively.
Oh, you know, if I'm
setting up against that team, obviously you're going to attack the right side, aren't you? You're going to, you know, that's where the weakness is. But again, you can always sub out Forrest, bring in, I don't know who we'd bring in. Well, bring in Danny McGrain.
We
nick a couple of goals early, don't we? Right, we're 2-0 up. We're 2-0 up at halftime. They score in 55 minutes. We're panicking. Then we bring on McGrain. We take Forrest off. And we might have to bring Nakamura off for like a Scott Brown or, you know,
it's
something.
It's the respectful thing to do in Italian football when you've racked up a cricket score to call off the dogs.
There you go. That's me. I've always looked like that. So that would be my slight concern. But I'm banking on my size and strength at the back, absent Forrest. I'm banking on the other three to pull us through. And if things are getting very ropey, I hook Forrest and bring on Danny McGrain.
And you wouldn't be able to get the ball off this front seven. It'd just be ping pong. Just try and stop us scoring.
Every single one of them as well. Well, I mean, Larsson's, Larsson was a technically great player, clearly, but positionally brilliant, but strong and all that.
Yeah.
But the other five are just technically are just off the charts. So we're good.
We're good.
It's a good line.
Right. So we always end the show with the one that got away, Lawrence. If you had to pick a player from your lifetime who you Celtic could or should have signed, who might it have been?
Well, you asked me this. When you asked me, and I thought, my immediate thought, because I always loved him, because I grew up in the same area, and he was a legendary figure. I mean, I grew up in Stirling, but he grew up in, I think it's Sauchie, Alloa, which is just not that far away, and everybody had heard about him. It was Alan Hansen. Alan Hansen grew up in Tully Allen, somewhere out there. Anyway, I thought he played for Tully Allen Juniors, but he actually played for Sauchie. Went to Lauriston High. I think he went to Thistle. I think he played for Thistle when he was...
Yeah, in the League Cup final.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. His brother John.
Ah, right. Okay.
He was on Thistle. He was at the game.
Right.
But his brother John played. But I think Hansen was a couple of years later.
Right, okay.
But just, a modern... I mean, at the time, God knows what he would be like now if you looked at his performances. But at the time, big guy, you know, amazing footballer. You know, a classy kind of Franz Beckenbauer.
Elegant, yeah.
Yes, really. Actually, quite a good story. He wasn't that into football. He wanted to be a professional golfer. So from the age of, I think from 15 to 18, he played, you know, he didn't play for any Scotland youth teams. He was head and shoulders above everybody else, but didn't play, but tried to make it as a golfer. So that's what he wanted to do. But then, so he played junior football and played golf. But then he went to, they had to make a choice and he went to Thistle. And we should have stepped in. I mean, he was an obvious replacement for Billy McNeil. Clearly, he would have been a perfect replacement for Billy McNeil. But I didn't realise until this week he was a lifelong Rangers fan. I should have guessed because he went to Lauriston High. I'm guessing he might not have wanted to go to Celtic, but he was a legendary player back then.
But Celtic being the way they are, he would have been welcome and he could have come and become a legend, like many have.
Well, Dalgleish and McGrain were both.
Brown.
Know. Yeah.
All are welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for being involved, Lawrence.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for downloading. Hail, hail.
This podcast was brought to you by Supersound.
Supersound.